Hello and welcome to Who Are You? This is the Babylon 5 Watchcast hosted by two former strangers, now friends, who've gotten to know each other while rewatching a favorite show from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Jafar.
And I'm Laura. And I'm a little sick, Jafar.
I figured, normally we ask like, oh, do you want the intro? We did not. I just took it because I know you're feeling a little under the weather.
I appreciate that, yeah.
I'm prepared to bear the vocal brunt of the episode.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's happened a handful of times. One of us has been ill, but not so ill that we can't record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as it stands, this is like, is this the closest we've ever recorded to release? It's got to be. This is.
I don't know if it's the closest, but it's really close. Yeah.
We're real close.
Cutting it, this one.
I was sick. You were sick. I was sick. Like, it's been a thing. Uh-huh. It's almost like we had been trading illnesses, but we are hundreds
Over
of miles apart.
Over a thousand miles, yeah.
Yeah.
Got to watch out for those internet transmissible diseases.
Right. They're still called viruses. But yeah, so it's been a little bit since we've recorded, and then also it's just a very tight time frame. To the point where we have changed our two-week break. It was originally going to be after the next episode is what I had said previously. We're doing it after this one to give Laura some little recoup time. And then also you've got a trip on the horizon. And so it just makes the most sense to move our break up a little bit. So we will be back June 19th after this episode. We're taking a couple weeks off.
Mm-hmm. We just need a little buffer time. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to rebuild that buffer. But then it's going to be no breaks until the end for us. This will be our last break before we hit the gap between B5 and BSG.
Yeah, I was thinking as you were doing our intro, we're going to have to reword that a little bit because I haven't seen any of Battlestar. So it's not a rewatch for me.
Yeah. Well, and you haven't seen Crusade yet either, have you?
That's true. I think I might have seen a couple episodes they were on the air, but you know, all of it didn't air. So, yeah,
all of it didn't air. I haven't seen the unaired episodes, and I don't think I saw all of them that made it to TNT.
Right.
And so it's going to be first time for us for a handful of these episodes, most of them.
Yeah.
And I definitely haven't watched it since it was on TNT. So a good 25 some years. So we'll see how that goes.
I think I've got an intro. I just thought up an intro for the Crusade episode. So you just wait.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. I look forward to it. We still have a little bit before that. We got Legend of the Rangers. We got PsyCorps Book 3 Book Club. And then we'll start Call to Arms. We'll be joined by Vic from Demedia Media and Television and my other podcast, Last Time On.
Yeah,
and his upcoming podcast, which is announced. Yeah, he's posting about it.
Yes, he
Attention Bajoran Workers, which is a DS9 Watchcast, which is going to be part of the Who Are You? What Happened Her collective podcast universe. What happened her productions?
Mm-hmm.
Our little podcast family that we've been growing.
I'm so excited to hear their takes on DS9 and that Victor very consciously chose some of his hosts. So I'm ready.
I got to meet them the other night in a little test recording that they were doing, just help them troubleshoot. They didn't have any technical difficulties. And to be perfectly honest, I think Captain Murdoch is going to be more than able to help them with any technical difficulties. They won't need me.
Yeah.
I will not need to be their Chief O'Brien. But yeah, no, it was fun to get to meet them and just shoot the shit for half an hour over a whiskey. But yeah, lots of exciting things happening in the podcast network. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about The Road Home.
Yeah. The newest addition to the Babylon 5 universe.
Yes. Yeah, the most recent release. It came out a little, it was August last year. Mm-hmm. It's just about June here. So 10 months ago. I've watched it four times now, maybe.
Yeah.
And I
panicked
know that
a little as I declared it the newest and then thought, oh, wait, is there a comic book or something that came out that I don't know about? Okay, good.
Silence.
Whew.
And I've recorded some thoughts on this episode like a year ago.
Oh, okay.
When it first dropped in a League of Non-Aligned podcast episode.
That's right. Uh-huh.
I made a point of not listening to that episode because those were like very initial reactions right after it dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have been the only person who had watched it twice at that point because I happened to be at the San Diego Comic-Con world premiere viewing of this. And so it was very fresh when I think we recorded it like 2 or 3 days after it came out. I made a point of not going back to that. So listener, if you went back to that and found that I have conflicting opinions or have changed my mind about things or directly contradict myself, I don't give a fuck. I'm a human being. We change.
Time is a perspective changer for sure. Yeah.
If Ben were recording with us, he would say, it keeps on ticking, ticking, ticking.
Indeed. Indubitably.
So yeah, I'm going to go back and listen to that recording after this just to see. I'm kind of curious how my opinions have changed, but I wanted to take it as kind of a fresh look now compared to then.
Yeah.
Especially that was, you know, we were in season 3, I think. Having just come off of Objects in Rest, Objects in Motion, and Sleeping in Light, like we are right now, that definitely colored my opinions of this.
Sure,
in not a great way, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, no!
because I think those are a lot better than this. And that directly contradicts something that I said in that episode. I know that I said this was the best thing that Babylon 5 universe has produced since... I want to say Day of the Dead was what was my call out in that episode.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I completely disagree now. I think Objects in Motion is a superior product to this, superior episode to this in almost every way.
Maybe not Objects at Rest, but yeah.
Maybe not Objects in Rest, but definitely Objects in Motion.
Okay, yeah.
So, oops. I was wrong. Actually, Ben, you can clip that for your ringtone, which if you listened to last time on, I don't know if it's aired yet, but Ben admitted he was wrong, and that's now my ringtone.
Ah, so cute.
I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, I will say one thing about this movie, just straight up. The animation and the effects with the animation are fantastic. I really do like the animation and the details that we get to see.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
When we see the shadow ship and it looks like there's a floating city on the back of it, instead of just like black
blotches.
Etherealness.
Yeah.
Especially like watching it in 4K, like doing the whole thing, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
not
nice.
That they weren't spooky at the time, the shadow ships on Babylon 5 when it was airing in the 90s. Like, I thought they were cool and spooky, but this is like a level of detail that could not be achieved at that time and looks way cooler. So, love it.
Okay. Well, let's get into this movie. I almost said episode. We open on Sheridan and Ivanova being rude and Delenn correcting them. So this is kind of a play on the talk we get at the start of every episode in the theme where the characters are reciting things. But it's very different this time, and I didn't catch this before, because Delenn responds and corrects Sheridan and Ivanova. They say, I was there. She says, we were there.
Yeah.
Which implies that they're in a room together.
Yeah.
And not only does it imply that they were in a room together for this one, but it kind of implies that the theme song speech happens in universe for the other seasons as well, which is very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, even if that wasn't the intention, like they're in the same room, it shows the difference between human ideas and human narratives about ourselves. The two humans say, I was there. And the Minbari is a more collective society. And she says, we were there.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. Yeah.
And she is right to correct them. I just like the idea of them all standing around in a room saying these things and Delenn just looking at them both and correcting them. Just chef's kiss. Anyways, Sheridan can't find his famous lucky socks. This huge plot point from the show that we remember so vividly.
Yeah, this happened in the show, right?
No.
No, it didn't? Okay.
No, this is completely new.
I Mandela affected this because I thought, oh yeah, there was an episode with this, right? Right?
I do not recall one.
I don't know. Now I have no idea.
He has to go without because Delenn challenged him.
I mean, that's very common these days. That was a whole hipster thing. I don't know if it's still going on, but this was a thing people did, right?
It's gross. Maybe it's just my feet.
I was going to say, my feet cannot handle that, so.
No.
But no, I know it was a thing.
Too sweaty for that. No thanks.
Big same.
No one wants that. No one wants to be in the room with me when I take my shoes off without them having been in socks for an hour, let alone a day. Mm-hmm. A trip to Mimbar. No one wants that.
Yeah, I was the, if I was trying to do that trend, I had the no-show socks on because yikes.
Yeah. Lanier notices this and mentions to Delenn that he forgot to wear his socks, which is very good of him to do mere hours before he leaves John Sheridan to die.
This is so weird having watched Objects at Rest recently.
Right.
We've definitely tried to correct for the whole Lanier is a piece of shit a little bit.
It might be easy to go, well, this is a different trip. This is before or something.
No.
But no, it's not, though. Can't. They have the scene, Talon's there and everything.
The banner.
Yeah, the whole deal. It is the same exact trip out. So we know that Lanier is a dick sometime in between him saying Sheridan's not wearing socks and the next couple of scenes on their trip there where Lanier is conspicuously absent.
Is it a tacit recognition from JMS that that was a shitty plot, that we've put this here and there's no sign of it?
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
And I wish that I had watched Objects in Motion, Objects in Rest before the con, because I would have asked him that instead of any other question.
Yeah, that would have been a great, he probably would not have appreciated the call out, but.
No. I noticed you involved Lanier in this. Mic check. I noticed you involved Lanier in the beginning, and this is clearly placed Objects in Rest right before he leaves John Sheridan to die. But we don't acknowledge it at all, and Lanier's just missing until we start traveling through time. Is that a personal admission by you that that was a shitty plot?
Yeah, he would love that question.
What's the joke? I'll take my answer in the dealer's room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. having had conversations with both Ben and Adam, I think they wouldn't mind us borrowing just that little bit.
Yeah, for one time.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. It's appropriate. John reflects on his life as a politician and fear over not being able to be proactive or even helpful. Well, he hasn't been doing this job for a year at this point.
Yeah. Well, now he knows that he's not proactive or helpful. Uh-oh.
Right? He's really reflecting on the telepath crisis, which also doesn't get mentioned. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Probably for the same reason. And is just like, man, I wonder if I'll be able to do anything on Mimbar.
Yeah.
Without a bunch of down belows and telepaths, am I going to be useful?
We do mention the camera bots from As Seen in the Show. Because we have a narrator telling us a lot of stuff as they're leaving the station. And her little camera bot gets knocked away by the White Star, which is kind of cute and funny. It's like, hey, this is still the show that, even though it does deep things, does funny stuff too.
Yeah. Sheridan gets some kind of weird time illness stuff on the White Star.
I called this a deja migraine.
That's good. That's good.
Heralding that something's not quite right still. He's having timey-wimey problems.
Mm-hmm. They open a power generator that floods him with tachyons, which would normally be harmless, but because of the events of War Without End, he's having a bad time. We get a Zathras flashback to remind us how this all went down there, and it gets worse and worse till John finally jumps through time and space to find himself at a lecture Franklin is giving on the Pacmara.
Oh, man.
I remember this getting called out during the League recording of this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
me going, oh, I didn't. Wasn't that bad. It's that bad.
Mm-hmm. Like, Phil Lamar did a pretty good job trying to capture the Franklin voice, but mm-hmm. because we have heard Franklin say Pacmara, that really takes you out of it when it's he dumb. Pronounces it that way. Like, if we had never heard Franklin say Pacmara and we just heard other characters in the show say it, maybe you could be like, oh, Franklin's just got a weird pronunciation, but yeah. No, we heard that character say it. Like,
it's almost like Phil Lamar prepped for this role by like only watching 4 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, he's a pro, so he probably wanted to get through it as fast as he could, but that was a big miss for fans.
Yeah. Franklin gives us kind of the rules for what's happening. As he continues to jump, it will get worse and more drastic. But he has to find Zathras. He has to make his way to Epsilon 3, and Zathras should be able to help. Garibaldi is late to the party as John disappears, and we find out that Franklin lied to him about the time frame and that he's been dead for 3 years.
Yeah, he told him 18 years, and it was really like 23 years or something. So he'd been dead for a few.
Mm-hmm. And you call Garibaldi and not Delenn?
Well, Delenn can't get there, probably, if he's slipping around in time.
You take a video
You should at least
call.
Tell her, like, hey.
Right? Like, hey, your dead husband just time traveled. You want to spend a minute talking to him real quick before I tell him how to save his life?
Yeah. But Garibaldi's fifis are the ones we're worried about.
Franklin's like, oh, maybe I should placate to that white male and... really into the conservative shit instead of his fucking wife. Just like, you know, Garibaldi famously has not had enough handed to him in this show. He struggled so much and has had nothing given to him. You know, he's not the CEO of a $1 billion, multi-billion-dollar corporation or anything just because lease randomly.
Uh-huh.
So he really needs this boost for all white men everywhere.
The real crime of the road home is where's Lise?
Where's Lise? We love Lise.
We love Lise.
Yeah, why isn't Lise walk in with Garibaldi? It's almost like she was a forgotten character.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Okay, back to the plot.
Yeah. So Sheridan jumps back to 2258, we find out, in his conversation with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have just been headed to Babylon 5?
He said he had been there for a couple of months, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they're having folksy talk about when he got lost in the cornfields once when he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells this story about he got lost. It was noon, so he couldn't see east or west because the sun was overhead instead of off to a side.
Mm-hmm.
He panicked. His panic made the whole thing worse. And then when he calmed down, he found his way home, basically.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool.
I've got one problem with this, which is this is in Iowa. So he should have been able to look up, see the Hell is Real billboard and known where he was.
Haven't been to Iowa, but I can picture exactly what you're talking about.
That joke's from Beth. To give credit where credit is due. Very funny.
No, there's probably some of those in Western Oklahoma, too. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to pretend we're any better than the state of Iowa. Probably Sheridan markedly worse.
Sheridan jumps to Zaha Doom.
Oh, he's got a time ball chasing him, though. This is where we see the time ball for
the
first
time.
Ball.
The time ball. Yeah. The time ball is such a, like, throwaway plot device that I know it's important at the end, but I just can't give a shit.
Yeah. The time ball seems like it could just be the thing that's making him jump. Like, it's supposed mm-hmm. to be more significant than that, we find out, but it's like a zappy ball chasing him as he jumps.
Yeah.
And he doesn't,
and he's also the time ball sometimes. Like, uh-huh. sometimes when we see him warp, it like he's in a big time ball and it like destroys the area around him, and sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
the time stuff's really inconsistent in this movie.
And it's also not just time, it's space, as we talked about, because, you know, we went to Earth and he wound up on Earth and then he jumped farther back on Earth. But then this jump takes him to Zahadum and to the Icarus expedition.
Yeah.
How
fucking easy would it have been to just have him go when he like picks up the radio and he's talking to the archaeologist, who's a lady down there, to just be all like, Anna, John, what are you doing here? There's not time for that. And then go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we forgot that we Anna was on this expedition. Like, if nothing else, he should be like, can I talk to Anna, if he recognizes that voice is not hers? Like,
and it even makes sense in the plot, because the security guard is like, who the fuck are you? I'm questioning your credentials.
Uh-huh.
Anna immediately establishes a frame of reference for the expedition.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Like, it's not like there's a ton of people on this ship. There's 30,
like 100,
40, whatever.
Oh,
yeah,
I thought it was 100 total.
It might be. I'm sure they told us in an episode, and I'm sure I've just forgotten.
Yeah, it wasn't a ton.
Yeah. Like, the security guy, especially if he's, like, in charge of, like, security, they've been on the ship for months. It's a long-term expedition, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd know everyone's name.
Yeah.
even if you were bad with names, you could be like, if someone says, I'm Anna's husband, you'd be like, oh, I think I, what the fuck are you doing here? But maybe put the gun down.
yeah. And even if you have to, you'd be like, Anna, the Xeno, what, biologist? Was she a biologist?
Yeah.
I forget. Anna, the whatever, you know, because sometimes you can have multiple
Annas. She's like in charge,
Annas,
right? Yeah. Like, she's like one
she's
of the leads
up.
Of this thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd know who she was.
Yeah. And, you know, there's about 90 people at the company I work at. So I'm, as you say, you would know everybody. I'm like, do I know everybody's names in my company? I do. I mean, I'm pretty confident of that. Yeah. So it's so
you'd
weird.
Know a department head's name, regardless if it was your department.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, like, if you were all on the same building and couldn't leave for 4 months, you'd sure as fuck know everyone's name.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Especially if you're like bunking three or four to a room or whatever, like, you get it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so weird. It's like he's completely forgotten about Anna because now he has to Lynn.
Yeah.
And gosh, what a bad look. Sheridan's a man of bad looks.
Also, let's be real here. The whole point of this, the whole thesis sentence here is that love is the most powerful thing in the universe. Love will bend reality.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He always sees people that he loves, except this scene. Loves or loved, right? Because we don't get Anna, this is the oddball. Everything else is a dear friend, family member, or paramour, current or former, right? Mm-hmm. Every single other time, it is some, or the station, which is also an argument to be made that he loves the station.
Right.
This is the weird one, right? And because
close,
of this,
right,
they have to say, oh, well, he's just jumping around in important stuff in his life. When in reality, he's jumping around to things that he was emotionally connected to.
Uh-huh.
Because he has no emotional connection except for the war to Zahadum. And if he had gone back to the nuking scene, that would have been different. But this point?
Yeah.
No. His only connection to this is Anna, and it's a huge plot point for him. It's such a thing.
And he doesn't try to save her. He just tries to stop them from waking the shadows. Like, that's the motivation you're feeling, is he's like, stop waking the shadows. He doesn't call for Anna. Let me save Anna.
Yeah.
It's almost like women don't matter. I don't know.
Right. If I think that one change would have increased a whole Babylon rating at the end of this thing for me.
Yeah.
I think I do.
Interesting end of episode spoily.
Well, it really takes the whole thing and aligns it in the way that it's trying to say something. And it's so unlike JMS to miss such an obvious connection in his storytelling. And that's what makes it the biggest disappointment in my opinion.
Interesting. Okay, so he fails. They don't. Yeah. They still wake the shadows. Like, they don't succeed. And as the shadows are, like, overwhelming the IPX team, he gets agitated enough that he jumps again. That's another thing. Agitation makes the jumps happen more frequently.
I feel like that's just for a Zathras joke.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with, to be perfectly honest. It's a funny joke. Sheridan pops over to Babylon 5, and we see Sinclair is in charge with Ivanova and CNC as a shadow ship attacks the station. Sinclair resolves to sacrifice himself to see the shuttles out and then orders Ivanova to make sure that she gets on a shuttle after she's done doing her job up here. And she immediately turns around, disregards that, and gets everyone else out of there.
Yeah, well, she's got to do that because we remember a very famous scene that we've got to call back to here in a little bit. So, yeah.
Good for her. Good on Ivanova. I mean, her logic is sound. I mean, one, of course she's going to go down with the ship. It's Ivanova. But also, like, either they both live and the order didn't matter, or they both die and the order didn't matter.
Exactly.
Like, Sheridan, Ted Sheridan's going to come after her. Like, she's not worried about that.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. I thought the Sinclair voice actor did pretty well. Like, agreed. This is a hard, big ask of these voice actors who have to fill in for the people who are deceased.
I will say that I think most of the voice actors did a good job. And this is going to be a weird opinion and a weird statement. So I'm just going to preface that now. It's jarring hearing them with the surviving cast members, not because they don't do a good job sounding like their previous characters, but because the surviving cast members have aged out of their voices and don't sound like they did 30 years ago. And so we're getting emulations of what these characters sounded like 30 years ago and the current voices of the actors and actresses who are still with us.
Mm-hmm.
That's difficult for, like, my brain has a hard time hearing plus 30-year Claudia speaking to what would have been 30 years ago Sinclair.
Yeah.
Like, my brain has a hard time processing that discrepancy because the characters are the same age in the visual medium, but their voices are not of people the same age. And I don't know what you do there. Like, you try to make your voice sound like when you were younger. You put in the effort. I think Peter Jurassic does a pretty good job of this compared
Peter's
to everyone else.
Peter's is the best, I think. And he's probably buoyed by the fact that he gets to have his weird accent.
Like, yes, for
sure. That helps a ton.
That has to help a ton.
Claudia's the one I noticed it with the most. And that's just the thing that happens to women. Like, you know, your voice drops. Well, I mean, it happens to us all, but I think it's more noticeable with women.
She also has not had an easy 30 years, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she's had some fucking struggles in her life with her body and stuff that have caused that voice change to become more dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so happy that we got the surviving actors involved in this. Don't take this the wrong way, listener. Mm-hmm. I would not have done this any other way. I think they did it the correct way.
Yeah,
it's just kind of weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know. Like, I'm very happy with it overall, the voice acting.
Yeah. I think Bill Mummy is, if I had to pick the second that you don't notice it as much, Bill Mummy.
I think the fact that he's got like four lines helps that a lot.
Probably true. Yeah. Okay. So we were being attacked by the really well-designed shadow ships at this point.
Yeah. Sinclair and Garibaldi run into Sheridan and they're like, who the fuck are you? And it's possible that he just doesn't exist in this universe and that's why they don't know him. But if the Earth-Mimbari War still happened, they would know his fucking name. He is famous.
He was the Black Star Killer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like, that was a whole thing when he first came on, that he is a very famous Earth captain. Like, everyone knows his fucking name. Mm-hmm. And especially another vet like Sinclair, who was on the line. Like, that's a big deal. Like, you would know who the fuck John Sheridan is.
Yeah, that's true. But they don't address that, you know, maybe, well, it's obviously another timeline because this did not happen in the show. Except,
stuff's going on. You know, it's not like they're just like hanging out in the Zocalo or something. Like, they've got other things on their minds.
Yeah. Active situation.
Yeah. But it's just like, he could have just said retired Earth Forest and used a pseudonym to not fuck with the timeline. And this would have just passed right on by the bullshit-o-meter. Not a concern.
Yeah. Good point.
So, I want to talk about the elephant in the room here.
Do tell.
I know that this is a production thing and not a choice being made, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But these shadows are ground soldiers.
Yes,
right?
The ones that are boarding the station, for sure.
In the show and in every other piece of media we see with them, they are so unwilling to die in direct combat. They are so much more important than anyone else that they literally co-opt telepaths from the other races to psychically drone all of their non-capital ships.
That's true.
They don't give a fuck about any other race, and they don't risk themselves. That's like their fucking thesis statement as a race. This, we're going to make all of these other races fight each other, and when we do show up, it is hidden in bigger numbers than you expect, and for very specific interactions with specific people.
Yes, that's a thing that we saw multiple times on the show, was that we had like cloaked shadows running around hanging out with Morden on the station. Like they weren't going to be seen, and they specifically avoided the Vorlon. Like they knew that was a problem.
Now, there's a whole thing where because B4 went back, the shadows are weakened, so they have to co-opt some of these servitor races maybe instead of do things directly.
Mm.
And maybe in these timelines where we see a ton of shadows as soldiers, Sheridan's not there, so they don't get B4 back, so the shadows are stronger, so they decide to be ground soldiers. Is the mental gymnastics I can do to explain this within the grounds of the plot. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. And they're clearly not just mowing over everything. Like, they're gaining ground, they're winning, but they're not completely mowing over the humans. Because...
And we see a ton of them die.
Right, right.
And they've got these, like, little shield things that help them instead of just being invisible with the shields and fucking shit up. And it's just like they're using swarm tactics, which is also, weird for them. Like, they do it with their ships occasionally.
Yeah, but those ships might not be piloted by...
Exactly.
A shadow.
When they do swarms, it's tons of tiny drones and like three medium class ships because they're so powerful they don't need a ton of them. That's the whole thing. For there to be thousands of little actual shadow aliens doing like a ground invasion, it just feels so starkly different.
There's an easy fix for this too.
Yeah. The Drock.
Yeah.
Or any of the other servitor races. You could have a ton of random aliens and just show their watchers on the shoulder. Like, you could do all kinds of stuff with it.
Yeah.
And make it a varied army that would
you
have been
cool, but expensive. You could just
put humanoids in suits. Expensive.
Humanoids in suits with watchers and, like, a shadow behind them. Like, not on the front lines. Like, you see the shadows, like, driving them forward.
Yeah.
But... not
like one or two
exposing themselves
being the master manipulators that they are, puppet mastering thousands of foot soldiers, right? And I get that, like, you have to make models, like, animation is expensive, and it's really easy to copy paste 10 shadow shoulders into 100 shadow soldiers instead of it is to make 100 different humanoid looking dudes. Like, I get that.
You can even just put them in a suit with a helmet and you just make the same humanoid looking thing. Like, you don't have to, you can do a copy paste. It can be done. I didn't even think about that. So, man, that really is like, oh.
It feels weird.
It is weird. It's weird. And when you think back to those episodes where we saw this possible future, I don't think that, you know, they might have. It feels like there were moments where there were like shadowy explosions, like foggy explosions, and you see like forces pressing forward, and it wasn't shadow forces. It was like humanoid bodies. Like, so that would have made a lot more sense.
Anyways, the fight does not go well, Enterprise. Ivanova goes out with Boom today. Sheridan goes to blow up the station so that the shuttles have a chance to escape because they can get away, but the shadow ships can't. Sure.
Okay.
Sheridan gets the sassiest update to Siri from the station core and starts flipping big dramatic switches when we need to be reminded Jakar and Leeta exist.
Is this a nod to how they go off together, too?
100% it is. That yeah. is a question that was asked of JMS at San Diego. And he's all like, yes, I put them together explicitly because we put them together at the end of the show. And I thought that was a nice thing to do here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well,
100%
having Leeta here is a great plot device because she just gives him one of the old quick scans and sees that Sheridan is telling the truth about being a weird time traveler.
Yeah. Sheridan quantum leaps away just before we get our beautiful CGI shot of the station exploding. Because, of course, we need that.
Yeah. We need to be reminded of the emotion of Babylon 5 exploding.
John jumps to his time in Lockley's quarters. Once again, someone he's emotionally attached to in his past.
Someone who's not totally dressed. Very rude.
Very rude. But he gets himself a shuttle to Epsilon 3.
We didn't watch this with the subtitles on this time. But if you watch this with the subtitles on, when the guns like turn and talk to each other and decide not to shoot, the Epsilon 3 guns, there's actually like subtitles of what they're saying, like in English. Because it's, you know, just alien gibberish.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I recommend go check that out with the subtitles on. I can't remember what it said, but the first time we watched it, we saw it with the subtitles, and we were like, ah, that's funny.
I normally watch with subtitles, but I missed it.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back. Anyways, Zathras formally introduces what I'll be calling the Zathraverse, which is like the multiverse, but everywhere has a Zathras, or two, or nine.
Yeah, whatever you need.
He explains that if Sheridan doesn't fix this, the universe will cease to exist. And at this point, are we to believe that the guy who literally nuked himself doesn't grab Lockley's sidearm just in case at this point?
Good call, yeah.
Like, later, in a couple of scenes, Jakar will tell him that if he dies during this, the universe will cease to exist and he has to find a way out of it anyways.
Uh-huh.
But, like, the way Zathras says this, I'm like, oh, so I can kill myself and save the universe? Had a good run, like, it's a very easy decision to make.
I actually wrote down here, I think I gave the Sheridan actor the highest compliments. Or no, sorry, not the Sheridan actor, the Sinclair actor. It's so easy to confuse. The highest compliments, but I actually wrote down that the Zathras voice actor was the best voice actor.
He did a great job.
He did his homework.
The great machine gets to work on a time-space dimension anchor for John. As he leaps away again, once more the time orb comes in, and Zathras clearly mouths that it's like, don't run, that's Delenn. Like, you can see the word Delenn on his lips, but we don't hear the audio.
Oops.
That's fun.
Yeah.
So, I never noticed that he actually says it before.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
So John ends up on Earth, hanging out with Londo and Ivanova in a reality where the war was lost. Once again, drawn to those he cares about. The Vorlons are sore losers, having lost the Shadow War, and are destroying the Shadow influence on Earth by treating the moon as a cue ball.
Yeah.
As Londo quips towards the end. He leaps away before we get some more cool explosions, because cool explosions are not expensive in animation, so fuck it.
A lot easier. Yeah, there was not enough earthquakes happening, though, as the moon was being knocked closer to Earth. Like, they do a tidal wave, and that definitely would happen, but, like, there should also be a lot of earthquakes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you don't want to destroy your visual. I get it.
It also looked like the moon crashed into Florida, which just amused me.
It was pretty funny. I was like, do you think JMS has like a personal grudge with Florida? Because that would be very funny. We know he's not above this, so.
Yeah, for sure. Sheridan ends up at the edge of the universe and chills with Jakar, who has become one with the universe after he found the edge of it. No Leela, though. Once again, forgetting women or characters.
She had to go back. Yeah.
Right. This is supposed to be the big thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, this is supposed to be the, like, we miss Andreas, like, give me my last Jakar speech kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This falled really flat for me this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It just, like, it didn't feel like it had the emotional impact of watching it the first couple of times.
Yeah. The animation I've been very complimentary of, but I hate the neon green shirt they stuck Jakar in. That was the thing I was thinking about while he was speeching. I know it's silly. I know that's a silly thing to say, but I was like, that is not the right color for you. Sheridan plays some lip service to the universe trying to figure itself out, which has always been a concept I loved, but it kind of was like babble to me. It wasn't a Jakar speech for me.
Yeah, it felt more like an internet rant than a Jakar speech in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a Twitter thread that like Scott Adams would post, not necessarily a Jakar speech.
Yeah, you know, they bring in the idea here that the greatest force in the universe is love. And I agree with you that if perhaps one of the little scenes in between had been changed, that idea might have felt more impactful here.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So yeah, love can break the laws of physics. That's cool. He leaps away and ends up at the Zocalo. The emotional connection here, of course, being his big speech, but also the station.
Uh-huh.
He sees Lanier, who, lest we forget, 3 weeks ago tried to kill him.
Well, this is a different point in time, because Sheridan, in this universe, as we are about to meet, has the old uniform on.
Yeah.
His original.
This is pre-Shadow War. Shadow War hasn't happened. Shadow War won't be happening, ? Delenn is unchanged. Like,
yeah. So this Lanier makes a lot more sense than the first Lanier that we got.
Yeah. Sheridan passes out and wakes up to himself in charge of the station. Leela watches the movie at 30x speed.
When will then be now? Soon.
She confirms everything. And we find out that this is a world without a Shadow War. Zathras shows up, having gotten the news from the Zathraverse's Council of Zathras, Council of Zathrai. And it all comes together. Love points the way. It was Delenn all along, etc., etc. She leads him home. And this was all well telegraphed the entire film. Love saves the universe. Oh, good.
Yeah, they give us a little thing where the original Sheridan of this timeline and Bald Delenn are talking to each other and maybe having a little cutesy. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
we'll see.
Did he know that that was Delenn? That was like human Delenn that came for him and stuff? Like, did he put that connection together?
I can't remember. Exactly. Yeah.
Lockley and Sinclair are hanging out. That's fun. First time those two characters interact.
Yeah. That's cute.
Londo
like
and Jakar, the banter, and we get the Babylon 5 is back.
We had Leela and Lanier sitting at a table as well. So.
Oh, hey.
They're like playing. Oh, no. She's trying to like project the cards that she's seeing to Lanier, and he's trying to guess it, and he's doing a really bad job. And I was like, aha. So you thought of this too, huh, JMS? Like,
yeah.
You realize that would have been a better plot? Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it would be. I was just thinking about the scene from Starship Troopers with Rico and Doogie Howser.
Yeah.
That's just like this as well. I also just rewatched Starship Troopers, so it's kind of very fresh in my memory. Anyways, we get a little bit of this universe, and then we go to credits.
Ta-da. And B5 is here to stay, they say at the end, which gave us all hope.
That they would have announced another animated movie by now.
Yeah, or that reboot they've been talking about since we started this podcast, right?
Yeah. We'll see.
Capitalism strikes again. It's all hit.
I'm I mean, at this point, if anything else, B5 comes out, we'll probably have to do a bonus episode because it's not going to be before we finish this coverage. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Yeah. What'd you think of this movie? And did your opinion change since you watched it first months ago?
I don't think my opinion changed very much. You know, I had that high of like, new Babylon 5, hooray, finally, mm-hmm. it's time. But I do feel like the speeches were a little bit babbly. Like, I felt that both times.
Yeah.
Like, okay, who cares? Like, you're trying to give us a JMS speech. I get it. So, you know, it's certainly better than The Lost Tales. I remember the profound disappointment when The Lost Tales came out, you know, a few years mm-hmm. after. I was in college, I remember, when The Lost Tales came out. And I was, like, so Same. Excited for New Babylon 5. And my disappointment was extremely palpable.
Yeah, same.
So this was a lot more satisfying. This feels like a better than average episode of Babylon 5, I think. Or mm-hmm. maybe average. I give it a 3.5.
I was very high on this when it came out. I was all like, mm-hmm. hey, it's fun. It's new B5. It's enjoyable. They go to some of the tropes, but they try to do the new thing. Like, if this is how B5 is going to exist going forward and this is the start of it, uh-huh. it's only going to get better. Like, yeah. I'm here for it. Big fan, big support.
I wouldn't hate an animated Babylon 5 reboot if that's where we had to go. Like, you have to animate it? Yeah. Fine. I'll watch that. Yeah, yeah.
For sure. This time, though, especially coming off of Objects in Motion, Sleeping in Light so soon, having that so fresh in my mind, it's just like, man, I don't know. I feel like it just needed a little bit more time, which is really weird to say. Uh-huh. Some of this felt kind of rushed. And I know it like sat on the back burner for forever. This had been done for, completed for years. You know, like before it was released. Between, I think, animation time and everything. But it's just like, I don't know, just a couple of little changes. And I've always said on this scale, if I feel like I could make the episode significantly better with like one or two dialogue changes, then it's not a particularly strong episode. Mm-hmm. And I definitely feel that way here. And I'm mm-hmm. not a professional Hollywood writer. Like, it's, and I know it's easy to be a critic and a lot harder to make shit.
Yeah.
But
yeah. For sure.
I feel like I got to give it a 2.5. And I think if we had gotten Anna, this would have been a 3.5 for me mm-hmm. in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I'm begging you not to forget about your female characters, JMS. Like, I know that mm-hmm. a lot of effort. We don't know much about Anna besides she was a biologist, but we saw that John loved her before she died. Like, come on. Don't forget yeah. about them. I don't know.
Yep, but we're just gonna keep forgetting about them.
Hopefully,
Battlestar Galactica is better to its female characters.
Oh no, I don't like the way you said that.
Next up, we've got Babylon 5: The Legend of the Rangers, To Live and Die in Starlight.
Sounds very romantic.
Came out in 2002, was another attempt at a spinoff after the failure of Crusade.
Ah, okay.
That was not picked up. After being punished for retreat from combat, Ranger David Martell is given command of the Leandra, a haunted 20-year-old Mimbari fighting ship. He's escorting ambassadors to a secret archaeological site, the oldest city on record, and a clue to a dangerous ancient race.
Oh boy, another archaeological site in a movie.
Yeah. Jakar's in this one. He's on the cover.
All right. I can take that. I'll work with that.
No Ian McShane or Martin Sheen, though.
Damn. I would take one of those.
All right. Well, with that, we'll be back in a few weeks, listener. If you're listening to live, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to take a couple weeks off, as is our way in between seasons, to just give ourselves a little bit of a break. So we'll be back in a couple weeks. in the middle of June with that. But until then, we of course have to say thank you. Thank you, Jeremy Siegel, so much for our theme music. We really appreciate it. You can find more of Jeremy's work at jeremysiegel42.bandcamp.com, where he's the only Jeremy Siegel who makes music on Bandcamp. Or on streaming services as Nuclear Jaguar.
And thank you to Angry Deck Time Machine on Instagram for our podcast artwork.
Aaron, thanks so much for editing this podcast. Really appreciate all the time that you put in this particular crunch. Sorry.
Whoops. And thank you to you, the listener, for being here and enjoying the road home with us. If you have thoughts you want to share, you can send those to whoareyoub5@gmail.com, or you can join us in the Discord. It's a fun place. The What Happened Here podcast Discord.
Start drafting your thoughts, your treatises, as we are going to be asking for Crusade thoughts, but also Babylon 5 as a whole thoughts a couple of weeks after. So start thinking about what you want to say about those things for our Crusade recap and our Babylon 5 series retrospective that we'll be doing afterwards. We'll see you next week, Internet. No, we won't see you next week.
Ah, damn.
Damn. No, we'll see you in a few weeks, Internet.
Okay, bye.
Bye.